Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Jamie Alexander on her comfort movie, Tommy Boy. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm joined on the intro, as always, back like when we were starting out, when we were kids, Sammy, yeah. We're doing the intro just like it's old times.
It's like BC.
Yeah.
Before COVID.
God. Sammy joins me to get you guys all warm and fuzzy and ready for this exciting new episode of Happy Second Views with first-time guest Jamie Alexander, who I've wanted to have on the show for a while. I've known her a little bit over the years. I've interviewed her for various projects. Always been very cool with me, and she did not disappoint. She delivered an unexpected choice for her comfort movie today. We're going to dive deep on the 1995 classic comedy, Chris Farley, David Spade, Tommy Boy. Sammy, what do you think? Tommy Boy thoughts?
I have been actually meaning to rewatch this movie in the last couple of months. It's been one that I forget that I want to rewatch and then remember it like a time, like I'm, you know, in a supermarket and I'm like, fuck, I want to watch Tommy Boy.
I like to envision you wandering around the supermarket in your mask and pulling down the mask to exclaim, fuck, I need to see Tommy Boy.
Yes, that's incredibly accurate.
Oh my God, psychotic. I had not seen Tommy Boy in quite some time. It was a nice excuse to revisit this one and a good excuse to catch up with Jamie, who is starring in Blind Spot, fifth and final season, Thursdays at 10 on NBC. It's now or never, folks. The final, I think, 10 or 11 episodes are going out with a bang. Jamie's very excited about it. Lots of guest stars, lots of cool stuff. She couldn't be more pleased that it's ending in the way that it is. So I'm happy for her, and I'm happy we got a chance to
question.
Catch up. Yeah, please.
Question, because I'm like a visual person, so I want, for all the other VPs, visual people out there, yeah. Was this a Zoom record, chat you guys did?
Yes, we tend to record via Zoom so that we have that face-to-face, just as we're doing now, so I can see your dead shark eyes.
So what was her, where was she?
She says it, I'll repeat it because she said it in the conversation. She's in Brooklyn. She's living in Brooklyn by herself. And she's a New Yorker because she's been shooting Blind Spot for
Love
years. She's just the real deal. I remember I interviewed her. She was in that, what was the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with Johnny Knoxville? Was that called The Last Stand too? Like the Michael Jordan show? You Google it while I'm talking. I'm not talking to you, listener. I'm talking to Sam.
I got it. I'm on it.
You Google it, listener. And she, of course, many people know her as Sif from the Thor movies. There's a lot of conjecture whether we're going to see her back in one of these again. I hope so. She's kind of hinted.
The Last Stand, 2013.
I did it. Yep. Yeah. That was one of my first interviews with Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger and probably the first time I met Jamie. And yeah, she's just always been really cool with me. So I'm glad we got a chance to catch up today. And I'm glad she chose like a movie like Tommy Boy, which we have not covered like an out and out big comedy like this yet. So we dive into that.
Yeah. I interrupted you while you were saying something cool and exciting during The Last Stand.
No. I was just saying that what was the cool and exciting thing?
You were teasing she might appear in what?
Well, we don't know for a fact. I just know that there are high hopes that she may return as Sif in whether it's the new Thor movie or the Loki series. I don't know. I truly don't. And she certainly is not ready to spill the beans yet, but there have been hints. She's been teasing, perhaps, that we may see her in one of those before. And if you listen to the end of the interview, you might read between the lines. But again, I know nothing for a fact. She reveals nothing. But here's hoping. I'd love to see her back in the Marvel Universe sometime soon. Other things to mention. Let's see. So I don't know about you. I'm still watching a ton of stuff. I finished The Great, which is about to drop on Hulu. This is the Elle Fanning, Nicholas Holt show from the writer of The Favorite. Really good.
Catherine the Great one.
Catherine the Great. Really dark comedy. Did you ever see The Favorite?
Yes.
Yeah. So very much in that tone, that darkly comedic tone.
I love that.
Same writer. She's great in it. I did one of these MTV house calls, these live interviews on Instagram Live for MTV News with Elle. It was great to catch up with her. And yeah, she and Nick are great in it. Nicholas Holt.
We love Nicholas Holt.
Oh, and you were going to love him in this show.
Oh, I don't know if I could do it.
No, he's really funny in it. Really good.
It's hard.
The man who almost was Batman. I mean, I'm happy that Pattinson is Batman, but Nick almost got it.
I know. Nick's been a friend of the show for a long time.
He absolutely. Yeah, he's probably listening right now. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
He dropped into the Instagram Live the other day. He's stalking me. Yeah, no, he did.
Did you freak out?
Freaked out. Just freaked out.
No,
oh my God.
I bet you did.
I just jumped out my window. I couldn't even handle it. I'm also trying Devs out. There's been a lot of buzz about Devs, that the new show from Alex Garland.
Nick Offerman.
Offerman.
With his crazy hair.
Exactly. It's pretty good. I'm into it. It's kind of like weird sci-fi. Did you finish Friday Night Lights, Sammy?
Yeah. That fucking sucked when I finished that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was so upset. I mean, it was incredible finale.
Yeah.
And as someone from Philadelphia, it made me feel warm and fuzzy.
Are you on to the next already? What are you focusing on now?
Yeah, started West Wing yesterday, so I'm 7 episodes deep.
You got a ways to go. You know who else is watching West Wing?
Who?
I found out the other day, speaking of Elle told me Dakota has just started watching the West Wing. So you and Dakota are probably neck and neck right now, early West Wing.
We should chat.
You should. I'll connect you guys.
And I have questions about Squeaky, her character. Playing.
From Once Upon a Time.
Yeah. So I could throw those in.
She was creepy. She was good.
Yeah.
Other things to mention. As I mentioned, I've started to do these house calls, we're calling them, on MTV News' Instagram. Live conversations. I did it with Elle. Did it with Beanie Feldstein. Did one with Skylar Astin. I'm going to do one with Ross Butler this week. Next week, I'm doing Ben Platt. We love Ben. I know.
Oh, my God. What if Beanie drops in when you're in with Ben?
Well, Ben dropped into the Beanie one, so.
Oh, my God. Maybe I should watch these.
What are you doing with your life?
They sound exciting.
They are exciting. And I've actually watched Ben's new special. He's promoting a new Netflix special, which was his Radio City Stoplights concert tour. That's great. And I'm also
going to talk. You don't deserve to watch that before I do.
And also coming up on House Call, we're going to do Kumail Nanjiani. Very excited about that one. Some good stuff.
Swole as hell.
Me or him?
Well, I'll let the listeners decide.
Yeah, he's going to do that Instagram Live shirtless. We've demanded it already.
I'm not pissed.
And one other thing to plug over on Comedy Central, new episodes of Stir Crazy continue. This week, we have just dropped a new episode with Lauren Lapkus. She is a funny lady. Very funny.
I really like her.
She's good. She's really good. Good
people. She's good.
Good people. Good person.
She's good.
Unlike you, bad person. I want to mention a couple people on the Twitter, in the Twitterverse, who mentioned their comfort movies. I always like to see you guys shout out your favorites. As always, hit me up on Twitter, Joshua Horowitz, with the hashtag Happy Sad Confused and my comfort movie. Jessica Lawson says, any dance movie from the early 2000s, Center Stage. Save the Last Dance. Ugh. Coyote Ugly.
Step Up.
She didn't mention Step Up, but I'm sure.
She meant to, though. When I said that just now, she was like, oh, yeah, Step Up.
Yeah. Debbie Schauer mentions As Good As It Gets, just about any Disney movie. Okay. SJ Daily One, it's the last one I'm going to mention. It's appropriate for today, mentions Tommy Boy. Perfect blend of Farley's heart and Spade's acerbic wit. SJ Daily One knew something was up, knew something was in the zeitgeist, knew it was
what
coming up.
What a transition.
Amazing, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, let's transition to our big interview of the week. This is Jamie Alexander. As I said, she is starring in the final season of Blindspot on NBC Thursdays at 10. Check that out. And as always, hit me up on the Twitters and the Instagrams, subscribe, spread the good word. You know what to do. And enjoy this chat with Jamie Alexander. Jamie, it's good to see you. It's good to catch up with you. It's been way too long, and I can't believe it's happening this way, but it's good to see you.
Very good to see you. This is, you're like one of like three people I've gotten to talk to in the last, I don't know, 2 months.
Oh, God. So we're going to have to reacquaint you with like interpersonal skills, see if you remember how to talk to another human being.
Pressure. Yeah, no pressure.
So first of all, let's just catch me up. How are you doing? That's like the most loaded question on the planet nowadays. But like, have you settled into kind of like a new normal? Like what are your days filled with right now?
Yeah, I've sort of settled into a new normal. That's a great way to put it. Cause you know, I find like humans are very adaptable, and that's just one of the gifts we were given. And at first it was really tough. I ate my feelings a ton, laid around. There were times I didn't shower for like 2 days, I don't know. And then I switched over into wanting to learn stuff. Like I love learning. So I've been teaching myself the guitar. I've been teaching myself how to cook better, like holistic dishes and things like that, which has been actually really fun. Although I'm the only person here to try it, so I don't know if they actually suck or not. and I've been doing, you know, yoga and that sort of thing. But you know, I'm in Brooklyn, so it's a bit limited as to what we can do here. But it is sure. Like everywhere, I think.
Well, I think by the standards of most, I mean, it sounds like you're being pretty productive, because I feel like the standards have changed, right? It's like in the first week, it was like, am I wearing actual human pants? That's a huge day. And then by like, you know, week three or four, I'm definitely trying to like just do as much work and just keep myself busy, because it's just like all about distracting yourself from what's just like a incomprehensible situation going on outside our window.
Yeah, there's an adjustment period, you know, and it's important to not be too hard on yourself, but I find making lists really helpful. I'll make a list that's like as simple as clean dishes, laundry, like it'll be like chores or thing, email so-and-so, and then I can check it off. And it creates that sense of accomplishment, which is so great. And in all honesty, I have appreciated looking on the bright side, I've appreciated the downtime of slowing down, because I haven't had that in a long time. And I've been rehabilitating my body and mind and all those things. And so I have been trying to make the most of it, but you know, I'm not going to be super hard on myself and say, oh, I have to do this and do that and be productive. If I want to spend a day just doing nothing and watching movies, that's okay.
Yeah. Everybody should go a little easy on themselves because it's tough times for everybody. You took a road trip in the beginning of all of this, right? You crossed the country.
Yes, I did. It was so bananas. I was in LA and I was doing some work stuff, and then all of a sudden everything shut down and got canceled. And I thought, well, okay. And I don't own a home in LA anymore. So I was like, well, I probably should make it back to New York so that I can be in my home. And so I thought, well, you know, I've always loved going like driving. Like I've always loved road trips. And I thought, what a nice thing to be able to do, except that 2 days into the road trip, I made it to like, I think I was just about to get to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And then there was immediately an actual lockdown. So all the places were closing, and it became really difficult to progress onward towards New York, because there would be gas stations that were shut down. I mainly just peed on the side of the road, honestly. There were gas stations that you would purchase gas, but they wouldn't let you use their facilities. So you're like, oh, okay. And so as it went on, I had to get pretty creative in like how to make food, because all the places were closed. And but it was a journey. It was really nice. And just being out in nature, driving through that with the windows down and listening to good music and just finding peace with that. I really enjoyed it. And I was quite sad when I got back to Brooklyn. The state of New York at that time and still was so...
Oh, yeah. Especially when you got here. I mean, it's obviously still not great, but like it felt like the end of times for a few weeks here. It was rough.
It was insane. I was in the Holland Tunnel with two other cars. I couldn't believe how fast I was getting places. And I oh, I was so sad for like the first few days. And then I, you know, I would walk around the block or whatever, or, you know, do the like FaceTime or something like that. But it took some getting used to.
As you know, part of the rejiggered version of my podcast, Happy Sad Confused, is I've asked every guest to come up with a comfort movie. And you had a couple options. You came up with some interesting options. I was really struck by the ones we can talk about the one you arrived at and also the other ones that were in contention. But, I guess first, like, what's a comfort movie to you? Like what is the definition for you?
I think comfort in general is, familiarity. So I go into movies that I've seen a million times that I always can rewatch. Like, it's just never boring. It's always something great. And I was thinking back to like movies I used to watch in high school and in my early 20s, and then just movies that I'd always get people together and watch. And it was just always a good time. And one of the movies that came to mind that we decided on was Tommy Boy. That right. is one of my favorite movies. My younger brother used to impersonate him all the time. It was so funny. I can quote the entire movie, and I often do it. I have to be careful when I have people over because I'll quote it as the movie's going. I'm like, oh no, I'm that person. I got to but I just absolutely love it. And it brings me to tears every time I watch it. Like, even right now, I just am like, it's just such a good movie.
So I'm glad you chose this for a number of reasons. It's kind of the first movie of this type of just sort of like a, you know, like an out and out, like full on silly comedy.
Yeah.
And it's also one that I've seen, but for whatever reason, I don't know if it didn't hit me at the right moment or whatever. So it gave me a chance to go back to it and watch it again and sort of like see what other people see in it and you see in it. It's actually celebrating its 25th anniversary this year, not to date you and I, but yeah. So what do you remember? You, as I remember, you have a few brothers. So like, did the brothers like expose you to this? Like, because this is in some ways like the stereotype is like, oh, this is a guy movie. This is like a dude humor or whatever.
I am all about dude humor. I have four brothers. I don't know. I cannot remember the very first time I ever watched it. I think I had seen Tommy Boy and then immediately saw Black Sheep. Like, I had to keep seeing that duo, David Spade and Chris Farley, one of the best comedic duos of all time.
Yeah.
They were just so good with each other, and so the chemistry and the banter and everything was so good. And I just enjoyed how goofy and funny it was and how endearing Chris Farley was as Tommy.
Yes.
There was just something so wonderfully authentic about it, and I've just always loved that. I love people that are just themselves and that are goofy and don't really care what other people think. You know, they just live how they want to live and enjoy life.
No, you hit upon, I think, some of the reasons why it works for so many people, and me and watching it just the other day. He's just an insanely likable personality. Like, you can't, if you don't like Chris, aka Tommy, in this, there's something wrong with you. And and David Spade, who sometimes gets a bad rap and can turn people off, like, he plays off of Chris so well in this. It's like, it's innocence versus cynicism. It's like their body types are obviously totally different. It's just, it's a mismatch that just, you know, the cliche is chemistry, but in this case, it's real. Like, have you experienced that? Like, you know, people like me always ask actors, like, you know, chemistry on set and chemistry reads and whatever. Is that real, or is that just like bullshit that we kind of like tell ourselves?
I think there's some truth to it. I think that you can click with people and you vibe with people, just like when you meet people, like friends, like new friends. You just go, oh, I feel like I've known you forever. And there's that, it makes you instantly comfortable. And I think that's part of it. And it's almost like there's this strange level of trust immediately with the other person. And so I think that is true. There are times where, and I've had this in my career, where I haven't really, I've either been disliked or disliked another person, but the chemistry on screen is fire.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Interesting. So I think I'm not really sure the exact recipe for it, but whatever it is, it works. And so I just, you know, I've always tried to go with it. But there have been times where I've just immediately clicked with somebody, whether we're playing best friends or mother daughter, right, whatever, and it comes across. And then sometimes you can have really good chemistry in person, and it is awful on screen.
So let me go over some basics for the film for those that don't know. So as I said, it came out March 31st, 1995, celebrating its 25th anniversary very recently, very timely. Good job, Jamie. it had $20 million budget. It was not a huge box office hit at the time. It made $32 million, but from what I read, it became like one of those, it's like one of the most successful home videos that Paramount ever released. It was just bought and rented a gajillion times. Is that when, so you say you don't remember the specific way you saw it, but is most of your memory from seeing it just on repeat at home as opposed to in the theater?
Yeah, I never saw it in the theater because I would have been 11 when it came out. So doubtful my mother would have approved that.
That being said, it's not. I was also surprised. Yeah. It's not like an R. I don't think it was an R-rated film. It's got this like actually really like sweet cheesy score.
Right. There are some adult. I guess situations in it and stuff like that, but. I think obviously in today's age, that's more acceptable for younger humans to watch that kind of stuff. But back then, especially me growing up in the South, that was not a thing. But I remember quoting that movie just constantly. And I'm sure that I loved it the moment I saw it because I there was so much of that dynamic that I would often find that was just so off in the best way that like I would be like that with my brothers and my friends at school.
Sure.
Yeah.
Would it surprise you to know that it was not super well reviewed? I'm not surprised myself. 42% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm going to quote Roger Ebert, who can be hit or miss. I mean, I love Roger Ebert, but sometimes he was a little off. Here's what he said. He said, Tommy Boy is one of those movies that plays like an explosion down at the screenplay factory. You can almost picture a bewildered office boy, his face smudged with soot, wandering through the rooms and rescuing pages at random. Too bad they didn't mail them to the insurance company instead of filming them. Ouch.
Boy.
Rough.
Well, I agree to disagree.
How are you with reviews over the course of your career? Do you read them? Can they sting?
I don't read them. I never watch anything I've been in. So I've never seen any of Blindspot. Only the stuff I've had to ADR to dub. And some of the fight sequences, because I had to match it like in future seasons, and stuff like that. I've never watched it. The Thor films, the first one I saw, because I was at the premiere and I realized, oh, I'm in here. I have to watch this. But I would often like look down if I was on the screen. I'm not a classically trained actor. I don't have any kind of analysis that I would like to put into, I wouldn't get anything from watching myself other than like, oh, that's what I look like, that's cool. And I never wanted any of that to affect my ego for good or bad. So sure. I just stayed away from it. So with reviews, I just never read anything. I don't, because everybody's entitled to their opinion and I don't mind there being lots of different opinions. You know, I've had certain people, like sometimes my eye will catch a comment on Instagram or something like that. And it'll be like, you're the worst actress I've ever seen. I'm like, okay. And then they'll have people say, oh, I love what you do. And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, great. Thanks. I'm so glad that I'm not just one specific way. You know, the reason I do what I do is to try to invoke some sort of something in somebody. So whether that's good or bad, I don't care.
Totally. Yeah. I often say that about the films that I gravitate towards are the ones that are polarizing. You know, you want the ones that are like, you're going to argue with your friends about. You don't want the ones you're going to forget about. Like what even happened in that movie a day later? Because that means it didn't work.
Right.
So it was directed by Peter Siegel, Tommy Boy, who also directed some other films I love. He directed the third Naked Gun film, Naked Gun 33 and a third. He did Anger Management, Get Smart, which I think is an underrated movie. Written by Bonnie and Terry Turner, who are well-known as great SNL writers, but they also created That 70s Show and Third Rock from the Sun. So they know what they're doing.
All really good chemistry in all of those, right? Totally. Like between the cast, in my opinion, that it's just, spot on. So
were you an SNL person? Because this is definitely, like, obviously, while not taken from a specific SNL character, came out of his SNL run, and they're obviously SNL writers. Were you an SNL person growing up?
I was. Any chance that I could watch it, I would. It wasn't often like allowed when I was growing up, and I would, you know, I would find a way.
Right.
Like the tapes and
like the best ofs or whatever.
Yeah, I would. I found them, you know, as I got older, and I was just like, oh, that whole era, Dan Aykroyd, like. All like about, you know, Tommy Boy, just all those comedic actors that were in SNL and those that weren't, they just all meshed so well together.
Yeah. You know?
And so I was just such a fan of that time, like just the 90s in general.
Yeah. Do you appreciate, I noticed that Chris gets a stunt credit in the film. So like he was notable for like doing like his own, you know, comedic stunts in it. You obviously have done a hell of a lot to your body in the service of entertaining us. Yeah. So do you, I don't know, do you appreciate that from like a different kind of stunt performing? But like, do you, when you see him do what he does on screen, are you like, oh, that's gotta hurt. I get what he's doing. I get what he put himself through.
Yeah, there are a lot of times I'll watch things that I know, typically I'll know when it's a double or when it could potentially be the actor, but yeah. Either way, I'll know if a hit landed. So I'll know, I'll go, oh, I know that was a contact, because I've had quite a few myself. But I also know like what goes into that, the prep and the nerves and the execution of it all it's like a dance. It's very specific. If I've learned a little too close to somebody or even a little too far away, it can put you in the hospital. So like, it doesn't surprise me that he had some of his own, that he did a lot of his own stunts in that. And you know, it's, I don't know. I find like if it's safe enough, this is what I've learned in my career. As an actress or an actor, you don't have to do your own stunts. There is a specific department dedicated to doing that. And I've always been big on giving people jobs. Like I'm like, as many people as we can get, that would be great. There are times where it would really help the scene and the footage if the actor could in fact do it.
Right.
So I've definitely let go of the egoic aspect of that and would, especially in the later seasons of Blindspot, heavily rely on my stunt performer, Heidi. She just, you know, she would spend every day training for this, whereas I'd get 5 minutes of rehearsal before filming half the fight. And then I would learn it really fast, film it, learn the rest of it, film it. And it was just like the chance for error was massive. So I'm all for doing stunts that I have been able to train for and that are safe enough. And I'm also very okay with giving that responsibility to Heidi.
Yeah, you have to, it's a balance, I'm sure. And it sounds like it's kind of evolved for you over the years as you've gotten more bumps and bruises.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm very hard to insure now.
So. I can only imagine. Yeah, I always like, I'm always struck by like, people always used to ask like Harrison Ford about, you know, what about the stunts that you do? And he was always adamant. He's like, I don't do stunts. I do physical acting. The stunt guys do the stunts, which kind of makes
smart
sense.
Smart man.
Okay, the cast. We obviously mentioned Chris Farley as Tommy Boy. David Spade is excellent. We have Bo Derek out of nowhere. Oh, like,
I know, right?
Julie Warner, who was like a staple of like 90s films. Mm-hmm. I remember her in Doc Hollywood. Aykroyd, of course. And the great Brian Dennehy, who sadly we just lost, was kind of perfect casting. And I don't know, I don't remember. This is probably a huge change of pace for Brian Dennehy. So I'm kudos to him for taking a risk and going all out in a, mm-hmm. a silly, crazy comedy like this. There are a bunch of things I came across like in sort of like for context to this. This was Chris's like first big like leading role. And you know, of course, we lost him like way too early. He only passed away 2 years after this. Oh. And it's striking to me like this fascinated me. So. It was the Adam Sandler movie, Billy Madison. Billy Madison came out a month before this. And that was basically Adam's first like leading role. So you can really see like, so great, right? But to me, you can see like, oh, like that was, they were on the same path. And like, sadly, like Chris had these demons that he just couldn't get under control. And just, you know, you can't help but watch this movie. Like it's always going to be, I think for me, and I think for anybody, tinged with a little bit of sadness because you're like, oh, you're seeing so much potential for what he was going to do
yeah
in the later years.
Yeah, no, I'm I'm definitely very supportive and big into recovery because I am in it myself. And it is sad to look at that and know, because I've experienced that and I've also been able to share that with others and receive that from others. It's just sad to watch something like that and go, oh, like, you know, by the grace of God, I made it, but this person didn't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned he followed this with Black Sheep, Beverly Hills Ninja, but I think everyone would agree this was definitely like utilized his talents in the best possible way. What are the scenes that jump out to you? Like, what are the ones that you end up like not being able to control yourself and wanting to participate in?
Every time, I love when he tries to explain the whole taking the butcher's word for it type of thing. Because instead of like, I forget exactly the phrasing all of a sudden now that I'm on the spot. But I love when he's trying to explain, like, it would be the same as like sticking your head up a bull's ass. And he's like, no, the butcher's ass. And he can never get it right. And then he finally gets it right. And by that point, you're so proud of him. You're like, he nailed it. but I love the thing where he goes to see the guy and he takes the collectible car and makes it the ambulance. And he's like, and he's like, trying to save the new guy's in the corner puking his guts out, and all because you wanted to save a few bucks. And like, it's just like, and the guy is just stunned and he just says, get out. And David Spade's like, great, we'll be in touch. And he leaves like right away, like the whole time, him being so mortified in every intimate setting with Chris Farley's character is just the best thing ever. That's what complimented it so much was like, I found that David Spade was so incredibly able to play off of Chris's character so well and not try to upstage or anything. Like it just flowed so perfectly. And because of that, they were both so equally funny to me.
Totally. The straight man, like often that's like the unsung hero in comedies like this.
It's necessary. Ugh.
Totally. A few scenes like that have kind of become iconic. Like I think of like, you know, him singing I'm a Maniac while like Rob Lowe's like spraying him down.
Did you see Paint Chips as a kid? No, why? Like, he's genuine. He's like, why do you ask? Oh, God.
What about Fat Guy in a Little Coat, his little dance, which apparently was like something he would do in the SNL offices, like a version of that. Mm-hmm. Amazing. All the physical comedy, like him like trying to change in the bathroom, like he was just like so like knew his own body and knew how to like just like get the laugh in the right way. Mm-hmm. You know, I read that like apparently they had a 66-page script going into this, and no surprise, they kind of had to like improvise and kind of make it up as they went along a bit. And that's not a recipe for success 9 times out of 10.
Right.
But I guess when you have Chris involved at the height of his powers, it works. Have you had to shoot a film? You don't have to name names. Have you shot a film with an unfinished script and been like, oh my God, are we gonna get through this?
It wasn't unfinished, but as we went along, there was a movie I did back in, almost like a decade ago, where things kept changing. It was like based on the chemistry of certain actors and like how the movie was being loosely cut together. There were certain things that just didn't work. And so they'd have to take away and add. And so I just, you know, I just kind of roll with it. I mean, that's my job. You know, I'm given material and it's my job to make it likable and to make it watchable. And I love that challenge. Like if I find a script that, you know, there'd be times like I had to do things that I was just like, oh, this isn't the best writing in my opinion, but I will make sure that I perform it the best I can. And that's my job. So I never complained about any of that.
What about, you know, you haven't done a lot of comedy in your career.
Oh, no.
So we're talking about like one of the all-time comedies. Is that something that you're excited about, afraid of? People just don't think of you for because they've seen you in a certain context. Like, what's your negotiation with comedies?
Well, I think I am definitely. I'm not a sitcom girl. I just think it's. I could do it, but I know a lot of other people that could do it a lot better. But I am definitely a dark comedy girl because of a couple. I have a lot of. Physical attributes that help that are physical, what do you call it? Like stuff? I don't even know. What is it? Like,
again, this is Jamie's first conversation in 6 weeks.
First conversation. so yeah, there's like things I can use like that would be helpful. You know, I have a low voice. I'm tall. Like, there's a lot of different things I could work with that, but that I am very intense on camera, which could be very funny. I did do Nurse Jackie and I was supposed to be on it for a lot longer, but I had reshoots for the first Thor film and that took me from New York back to LA. So
Right.
I wasn't able to continue on, but I loved just the offbeat, dark, kind of like screwed up person, like doesn't really kind of misses social cues and like, you know, I love that. So it would be something I would totally be into. And I do think most people, because of what I've done in my career, really just want to see me be in drama and also like some sort of action. Like that just seems to be the thing that people really love. And I'm grateful for that too, you know, but I wouldn't mind exploring comedy. I am quite goofy in my, like in my daily life. And I've had loads of people tell me like, why don't you do more of this on screen? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm that good if it was scripted. The hell if I know, but I would give it a shot.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at anybody known for their physicality, their action stuff, and like, yeah, eventually, you know, the first 5-10 years of like, you know, The Rock or Jason Statham's careers, yeah, they weren't doing comedy, but it took them, or Schwarzenegger, any of them, like it took them a while to kind of like cash in their chips and like say like, try me out in this context. And yeah. Often it works. So I would love to see you, use your strengths in a different way. That'd be very cool.
Well, maybe I'll get a little bit more squirrely in quarantine and it'll just happen organically.
There you go. contemporary comedies or stars, are there any that like jump out at you? Like we're talking classics, but are like, what are the, I mean, oh, they don't make that many big screen comedies anymore. That's the weird thing.
I know. Oh, sweet Jesus.
That's okay.
I know. I'm trying to think. I mean, there are so
like,
many.
Melissa
McCarthy. I love her.
So good.
I love her. She's really good. The Heat. Sandra Bullock is really funny. She's quite good. And
well, that's another one of mismatched. Like plays the chemistry between those two mismatched people so well.
And Ryan Reynolds. He was able to tie action into, you know, comedy and all that stuff. I think he's quite good as well. I mean, there's a ton of people. You know, and it's so funny. I have not turned on my TV like. I've just been reading books, and the only book I have left in my house right now is Misery by Stephen King, which I'm like getting through it, and I'm like thinking this is probably not the best thing.
Yeah. A horror story about a housebound person.
I was like, shit. So I need to get some more books, or I just need to, you know, suck it up and watch some funnier stuff. I don't know. I was reading that last night, and I was like, I gotta stop. I know this is not gonna go well.
Let's give out some needless awards to this movie. This might be easy, but best performance in this film goes to
Chris Farley.
Yeah, I mean, come on. How do we not give it to the guy? Yeah. We talked about some of your favorite scenes. Best scene? Do you want to give like what's the one scene that should get the ultimate award?
I mean, I'm thinking of so many of the. I do really like the one where he straps the road flares to himself and opens it up like he's like there's a bomb because he tries it on accident. He goes, hey, this will only take a second. Everybody thinks he's there to blow up the place. And he's like, oh, you know,
a scene that will not work in 2020.
Right. I know sometimes. But that I loved because then it progresses to him just snowballing into this like epic, basically takeover, you know, where he just gets exactly what he wants.
Totally. Favorite line. You know most of the script already by heart. What do you quote the most? Like what's the one that you go to the most?
I always say when my friends and I are talking and it gets confusing or something, I'll just say it's gotta be your bull. Because like he talks about sticking his head up a bull's ass and he's like, no, it's gotta be your bull. And he's trying to work it out, like, oh shit, what is the saying? And I always say that. And 9 times out of 10 people get it.
I love it. Yeah, you can tell if they're a good person or not if they
exactly.
recognize it, right? Should there be a remake sequel to Tommy Boy? Do we leave this one alone? No.
I don't think it's doable without Chris Farley.
Yeah.
I mean, David Spade, I love David Spade's work too, but I just think, leave it alone.
Yeah. I always like to program a double feature for folks. Like, let's brainstorm a little bit. I have some candidates. If one comes to mind, great. If not, that's okay. What's a good movie to pair with Tommy Boy?
I'd say either Dumb and Dumber or Billy Madison.
Those are two excellent picks.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to throw in, I have two more. You can have like a 5-movie marathon.
Okay.
I'd throw in Step Brothers, another mismatched kind of comedy, and Kingpin, road comedy.
Oh my God, Kingpin's so good. I haven't seen that in forever. I got to rewatch that.
Kingpin's a great one.
Good idea.
Excellent. Okay, so that's our ode to Tommy Boy for today. I do want to mention, we should mention, of course, Blind Spot last season.
Oh, yeah, that old thing.
That old thing, that five or six years of your life that broke your body in half. have you kind of like said goodbye officially? You obviously have. You shot everything. But like, do you feel like it's in the rearview mirror now, or does it still feel present in your life?
You know, I think it would feel more present if this lockdown didn't happen. But because I've had a lot of solo time to reflect and to heal up and those types of things, like I've been able to graciously say goodbye to it. We stopped filming back in November. And then, of course, the next day I shaved my head. So that's fun. That's been fun. Oh, God. Who knew I had so many calyx and a slight bald spot? Anyway.
was that the first time you'd ever done that?
I cut it short before, but this was like the first time I just shaved it. And then I decided to bleach it for fun, which was like a horrible idea. But why not? It's been really great. And NBC decided to air it a little early given the current situation here. Right. And that's been fun. And so far we've gotten some good feedback. It just premiered last week and now it's on every Thursday, 9/8 central on NBC. it's pretty shocking what ends up happening in the finale. Like I couldn't have guessed it if I tried. And because it's only 11 episodes to reach the 100th episode, we were able to really pack each episode because we didn't have to spread it out this time over 22 or 23 episodes.
Right.
And we have the best guest stars. Like it gets insane where we were having, I think at one time we had about 80 in one episode. It gets crazy. I don't know. My showrunner, because he's so well-loved, everybody just wanted to come back and we were so lucky. So
amazing. What an accomplishment. That's great. Talk to me. You were saying we're obviously trying to jumpstart your comedy career. Do you know what the next, gig is?
I do, but I can't talk about it. It's like, it's kind
let me,
of
let me ask this, Jamie.
That, it basically tells everybody what it is, but I can't say it, so I'm not going to say it.
Right. Okay. So you're saying that with my educated guess, I could probably guess what it is.
You could, but please don't.
I won't.
I don't want to die.
I'm excited for a potential very exciting project for you that anybody with a brain could probably predict.
Oh, God.
You just said nothing. We have the video and the audio to prove it. You literally have said nothing.
I have said nothing. I am also, who knows, you may not even be talking to Jamie Alexander. We don't know who this is right now.
Well,
I've been in my apartment alone.
Well, I'm glad we got a chance to catch up. As I said, these are weird times, but it's been way too long to see you in person. Hopefully after all of this, we'll catch up for real. And talk about other silly 90s comedies. And hopefully by then you'll be starring in your own silly 2020 comedy.
And you will give me the best review.
Of course, always.
I can see your house from here. No, I'm just well, you and your wife take care and stay safe. And I enjoyed the conversation.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
3 to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.